This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now let's meet a University of Pennsylvania professor who took a job at a check cashing place. Lisa Servon is no fan of payday loans that can pile up and compound if they can't be paid in full right away. Yet, in an industry that is often seen as predatory, she gets why so many people come in with their checks. Professor Servon, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
So right away, I got to get to this. As part of your research, you actually worked at a check cashing place?
I did. I worked for 4 months, one shift a week, 1 8-hour shift a week in the South Bronx. And I also worked as a payday lender and loan collector in Oakland, California.
So people bring in their paychecks. Just give me a sense of the types of jobs people were doing that would come into that location in the South Bronx.
A lot of them were, I would say, kind of service sector work, restaurants, home health aides, people whose jobs, I think, epitomize a lot of the new jobs in the new economy, where people are getting paid by the hour instead of salary work, often jobs that don't come with benefits necessarily. And I think that people often came in because they needed their money right away. And so if they deposited those checks in a bank, they would take 3 or 4 days to clear. But if they brought them into the check casher, we could cash them and for a small fee, give them their money right away, which they needed.
That comment targets the most controversial part of this, the small or the big fee. Critics of payday lending say these places are a bad deal. And the subtext it often suggests that it's about financial education. Anyone who knew anything about money would steer clear. But you conclude, Professor, that it's a rational decision to turn to a payday lender like this.
That's right. And I was more surprised, or as surprised as anyone would be, when I realized, and I talked to the customers that came in. I interviewed lots of them after I was done working. And one of the top reasons people talk to me, particularly in the check cashing business, and I think we need to talk about fees differently in check cashing and payday lending, but told me that one of the reasons that they came to the check casher instead of a bank was because they found that the bank was too expensive. And that really surprised me, because you're right, what you see in the papers and all of the literature on these businesses is that they're predatory and they're charging people too much money. In New York State, where I was working, it cost at that time 1.95% of the face value of a check to cash it. So, you know, you're paying $1.95 on $100. If you wrote a check to your landlord, let's say, and that check cleared before your deposit that you made cleared, you're paying a $35 overdraft fee. And those are the kinds of calculations people are making. I think when we deem them to be too expensive, these alternative financial services providers, it's in large part because we can't imagine, at least I couldn't, living that close to the edge and having so little, so small of a margin in my finances.
And that's what you find, right? I mean, that's what the book is about, how people are surviving on what on paper might look like a middle-class income. It's sometimes just surviving.
So sometimes actually people are actually making enough if you added up what they made over the course of a year, but there are spikes and dips in their income. So let's say you're an hourly employee and you get 40 or 50 hours for a couple of weeks, and then it drops down to 20 and you have no warning. Or maybe like a woman I interviewed in California recently who's worked for the court system for 36 years and was put on furlough when the state was undergoing some financial problems. Suddenly, she's got to adjust to that decrease in income immediately, and she can't. So she ends up taking out payday loans just to make ends meet and pay the rent. So these spikes and dips are more common. Income volatility has doubled over the past 30 years. And so that means that people are unprepared for those dips in their income. And if an unexpected expense occurs during that time, they're often not able to come up with the money to meet it, end up taking out a high-cost loan, like a payday loan, and rolling it over, thereby getting even more indebted. So income volatility plays a huge role in the financial instability so many Americans are facing today.
So remind us about the distinction. There's check cashing at the place where you worked in the South Bronx, 1.9% of the face value of the check. But there's also payday lending. That's a different interest rate.
What you're paying at the check casher is a fee that's based on the face value of the check. And payday lending is illegal in New York State and several other states, which is why I went to California to do that work. in California, which is fairly typical, although these charges and fees differ from state to state, the cost of a loan was $15 per $100 borrowed. So you're taking out $100, you're actually paying $15, you're getting $85. And the reason they're called payday loans is that they're due on the date of your next paycheck, which is either 2 weeks or 4 weeks, depending on whether you get paid monthly or twice monthly. What happens in many cases, but not all, is that when that two-week deadline comes up, you're not able to pay the loan back. And so you end up taking it out again, another loan, paying another $15 for that same $85. So those fees quickly accumulate. And that's what consumer advocates and many policymakers object to, is the idea that the loan is often being used in a way different from how it was designed. In my research, what I've tried to do is really lift up the situations that people find themselves in that lead them to taking out these loans and recognizing that they often have no other options. And so while many people that I talked to said, yeah, I hope I never have to take these loans out again, I paid way more than I borrowed, many other people said it was the only place I could go when, for example, my car broke down and I couldn't get to work. And if I couldn't get to work, I would lose my job. Or I had to choose between putting food on the table for my children or having them go hungry. And the only way I could feed them was to take out a payday loan. Now, consumer advocates will often argue correctly that that's not a long-term solution to the problem. But I think neither is getting rid of all of these providers of loans, because the demand is still there. And the demand is there because people are not making enough money, don't have benefits, and are really at the whims of this labor market, which is not guaranteeing them stable income over a long period of time.
So when I ask about what's an alternative future for some of this, I mean, some of it is raising standards, raising income for middle-class families, for sure. But at the personal finance level, is there a better way to approach this so that this is not the only option for people?
So one way to go is to look at some of the innovation that's coming out of fintech. There's a company called Ripple in San Francisco that's using blockchain technology, the Bitcoin space age kind of stuff, to figure out how to move value from one place to another immediately and without cost. What that would mean for consumers is that rather than waiting 3 or 4 days for a check to clear, that check would be available, the amount of that check would be available to them immediately. So boom, you're getting rid of a lot of overdrafting and the need for check cashing right there.
All right, so innovation and technology, but what about the traditional banking system or the bigger banks? Are there things, could they do a better job?
They could absolutely do a better job. You know, the four largest banks hold half of all of our deposits right now, and they're not necessarily doing right by consumers. They could charge less for overdraft fees, which were virtually non-existent as recently as the 70s. And they could also change their practices to be much more consumer friendly. One of the practices that I discovered when I was writing the book is a practice that many banks engage in called debit resequencing, where a consumer, for example, who has $100 in their account and writes a $500 check to their landlord, spends $50 on groceries with their debit card, and pays a $25 phone bill. If all of those charges hit their account on the same day, the bank is using software to put that $500 charge first, so that you get an immediate overdraft, then the $75 charge, and then the $25 charge, resulting in three overdrafts for a consumer, where it could put the first two charges first, which would clear, and then the third one, giving the consumer only one overdraft fee. So consumers have to really look at what their banks are doing and choose smaller community banks, credit unions, other financial services providers that are treating them with more respect.
University of Pennsylvania Professor Lisa Servon's book is called The Unbanking of America, How the New Middle Class Survives. Professor, thank you.
You're welcome.